Welcome to Bookworms. It's the show where we read a book and then talk about that book. I'm your host, Alex.
And I'm Joe.
How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing good, Alex.
I am so glad to be here right now.
Are you?
Oh, yeah.
Are you? You seem pretty like you're ready to go to bed.
I might be that, too. But I am so happy to be here because we are discussing one of my absolute favorite all-time great books today.
One of your top five?
Yeah, one of my top 20, top five. I have my top five, and then each one has like 20 books in each section, and yeah, it's a whole thing. But this one is actually like a legit top five. It's probably even top three for me. I think it was a absolute like game changer for reading. Like the first time I read it, it was definitely my favorite book I read that year, and it made me just absolutely adore this author, and I ended up reading everything really that he ever put to paper eventually.
Sounds a little stalkerish.
A little bit. Which, considering what he's been accused of, is fitting.
Do you have inappropriate photos of him too, Alex?
No, but like I said, considering what he's been accused of, that would be fitting.
So what book did you pick, Alex?
I chose a New York Times bestseller, a National Book Award winner. It is The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie.
So yeah. When Alex said this was the next book we're reading, I said, cool. Got my copy, went into Goodreads to put it in that I was going to be reading it, and saw that I had already read it at one point. No clue I'd ever read it. And the only thing I could figure is like Alex must have forced me to read this at some point, and I completely blocked it out of my mind.
Yeah, now I made you do it a second time.
Still blocked.
Well, this will be a short episode then.
You do need your beauty sleep. You're looking a little rough around the edges.
Yeah, I'll sleep on the drive home.
Sounds good. Just close your eyes and pray. Yeah. Let your hands do all the driving.
Yeah, 50-50, I'll either make it home or I won't.
I hope your hands know the way, anyways.
It's all muscle memory at this point.
So, why is this one of your favorite books of all time, Alex?
So I chose this one because it is just so beautifully written. It's this story that's full of tragic events that happen throughout our main character's life. And yet, it carries with it this huge feeling of hope that never really goes away. It's, you know, he loses people in his life. He struggles with his identity, but he maintains this sense of humor and this sense of desire to keep going, putting himself out there and trying. And it's also really funny. It's got a lot of fish out of water jokes, and, you know, he's even fighting to just maintain his identity in whether he's in his on the reservation in his Native American life or he's in school with his white friends. He's being funny. He's learning and he's growing throughout the story, and it's a lot of fun to, you know, spend some time with him.
Cool, cool.
Love the enthusiasm.
So why don't you read the back for us, Alex, so people know what to expect if they have not read along with us this month, which we know everyone is.
Junior is a budding cartoonist, growing up on the Spokane Indian Reservation. Born with a variety of medical problems, he is picked on by everyone but his best friend. Determined to receive a good education, Junior leaves the res to attend an all-white school in the neighboring farm town, where the only other Indian is the school mascot. Despite being condemned as a traitor to his people and enduring great tragedies, Junior attacks life with wit and humor, and discovers a strength inside of himself that he never knew existed. Inspired by his own experiences growing up, award-winning author Sherman Alexie chronicles the contemporary adolescence of one unlucky boy trying to rise above the life everyone expects him to live. Yeah, so this is it's a young adult novel, clearly. It's a coming-of-age story.
It's also a controversial book, right?
Yes, this is Honest Publication, it was became one of the, you know, top most frequently challenged books in public and school libraries across the nation due to its sometimes graphic content, written by the perspective of a teenage boy, so they make a lot of sexual references, a lot of people the wrong way, and then, you know, 10 years after its publication, the author gets accused of a lot being highly, you know, sexually inappropriate with multiple people, and that also led to frequent challenges with school libraries.
Yeah, so you want to get into that about the author, or not really?
Touch on him a little bit. So Sherman Alexie, he was considered one of like the big writers of his generation. He was a huge voice for Native American literature, especially. So, you know, it's really a shame.
I remember when this book first came out, you were telling me about it because you were so jazzed about it and saying how when he had originally published, the people editing his story said, hey, you know, a few more drafts, this could be one of the great American classics. And he refused, saying, no, this is what it is. And the commercial success of it, he kind of laughed in their faces, even though everyone said, oh, you could have, but this could have been something special. And he's like, it is something special because everyone's actually read it.
Yeah, yeah, he's a big deal. He got a start in the 90s making like short story collections. His best known one was his debut collection, Tano and the Lone Ranger Fist Fight in Heaven, which he got to adapt into a screenplay for a movie called Smoke Signals. He turned that into a very successful writing career. The last thing he got to publish was a memoir he wrote, You Don't Have to Say You Love Me, which is mostly about his relationship with his mother. And reading that and this book as well, there's a lot of, like, when he says it's based largely on his own experiences in life, he's not lying. Like, a lot of the things that happen in Part-Time Indian also happen to him.
So yeah, you want to get into the book then, or you want to keep talking smack?
Yes, very polite smack.
So let's talk about our main protagonist, Junior, who is the one that is telling the story to us.
Yeah, so we got a first-person narrative here.
Teenager.
Very
very health problematic individual.
Yeah, which is what he opens up with. The opening line is, "I was born with water on the brain." And he explains that his brain is constantly, like, leaking spinal fluid. It's a fancy way of saying brain grease, as he calls it. So it gives him issues like his breathing is really thick and heavy.
He has seizures.
His head is oversized. When he was young, he wasn't expected to survive. Yet he somehow pulled through and he's able to, you know, make it to adolescence.
Yeah, and because he's so different, he's basically got zero friends. But his outlook on life is still really positive because this one friend that he does have is basically like a brother to him.
Yeah, his brother, his best friend is Rowdy on the reservation. Rowdy is a very troubled youth. He's, you know, the kind of person who, if you look at him wrong, he'll be trying to fight you. And he picks fights with almost everyone he sees except for Junior. For some reason, he's views Junior as a friend and someone that he wants to protect.
Yeah, and it kind of gets into it, and you kind of see this, you know, dynamic between the two where Rowdy's looking at Junior's home life, even though it's not perfect, it's a lot nicer than Rowdy's, where Rowdy gets beat up by his father constantly and is, you know, missing meals because they don't have any money, and he'll go to Junior's house where the parents are also alcoholics, but and occasionally missing meals, but they're making an effort and showing love and dedication to their children. And Junior treats Rowdy as a human being, where everyone else kind of treats Rowdy as this mad animal. Rowdy respects Junior and sees that there's this really smart, creative guy that is willing to be friends with him, but also sees that everyone else kind of picks on him, so he needs that protection. And so he's taken on that role of protector for the kid.
Yeah, and the depiction of extreme poverty in this book is very jarring, because you see almost everyone on the reservation has limited access to simple amenities like food. Most of them live in abusive households. Almost all of them live with alcoholic parents or parents who aren't around anymore. Well, they don't live with parents who aren't around anymore. But they're
good job, Alex. Yeah, you know the English language good. Yeah,
they are set so far behind what, you know, when Junior ends up going to the all-white school, like, he realizes, like, just how far, like, behind he is in education and just even building social relationships. Like, it's really, like, astounding to him, and it's astounding to the people that he goes to school with, because they don't really understand what he's dealing with to a degree.
Yeah, well, one thing I thought the author did really good was he didn't make it sound like, oh, Indians are poor because of the white man. He does point out numerous times that there are a lot of poor white people that are even poorer than he is.
Yeah, and he makes a comment like, It's like the poorest people on the reservation are the white people.
Yeah, and it just, it is, you know, kind of eye-opening. Like, hey, you know, like, 'cause he'll say, yeah, we have it bad, but there's other people out there that have it even worse than me. And they're white, so I know it's not white people holding the Indian down, just, you know, we're holding ourselves down.
Yeah, and the narrative, Junior does have like a relentless positivity about everything. He's able to really just put his life in perspective and compare it to other people's, and he realize, you know, he's better, has it better than some people. He's got it worse than a lot of people. However, he's got the ability to think creatively and give himself a chance, which is really what brings us to the main catalyst for what drives him to go to the neighboring school, which is he's in school on the reservation, and he gets a textbook from his teacher, and he opens it up, and he sees that the textbook has a note on it that says, "This book belongs to Agnes Adams, who is his mother," which means he is using the same exact textbook that his mother used 30 years ago. And he realizes that the school district he is in is so poor that they can't afford new textbooks even. And he gets so angry, he throws the book, and it hits his teacher in the face.
Yeah, and we actually get kind of a deep dive about the school systems and the reservation and how they kind of work. Junior gets suspended. You know, they want to expel him, but the teacher says, no, this is the smartest kid we have in the school. You know, and he actually goes to Junior, and they have a sit down man to man, which Junior just can't believe because he's so used to being less than, you know, because the teacher's a white guy. And like the teacher kind of, you know, basically gives an apology for his sins against Junior's people, you know, kind of giving the policy that the Western world had for a little while, kill the Indian to save the kid, which basically means killing the culture of the Native Americans and westernizing them and giving them a Western education, but doing it in such a poor fashion that it was just harming the communities.
Yeah, I'm actually on that page right now. Yeah, he's trying to explain. He's saying, it's like, I didn't literally kill Indians. We were supposed to make you give up being Indian. Your songs and stories and language and dancing, everything. We weren't trying to kill Indian people. We were trying to kill Indian culture. But then he goes on from there because he tells Rowdy that he sees, you know, huge potential in the boy and that he should seek education outside of the reservation because he has the ability to, you know, maintain his culture and his humanity, but also succeed academically in, you know, the modern world.
Yeah, and we learn a little bit about Junior's sister, his older sister, who basically became a recluse that doesn't leave the basement. You know, her big dream was to become a writer, and we also learn that Junior's father had hoped to one day become a famous musician, and I forget what the mother wanted to be, but it was big dreams all around. And the teacher is basically telling Junior, like, I watch people like you, you know, smart, bright children, slowly die in this reservation because they're stuck with this culture that we have, yeah, that has been created here of alcoholism and defeatism. And he's like, I watch your sister go from this bright flower to this, you know, withered, dried up, dead thing that won't leave her basement, isn't brave enough to do anything. And he basically says, you need to get out of here because I can't watch another smart kid wither away.
Yeah, the bulk of the students who go to that school, normally high school is going to be their peak, especially if they play sports. Beyond sports, they're going to be just falling into the same cycle of destructive or self-destructive behaviors that have perpetuated on that culture for way too many years. So Junior requests to go to the school in the next town over. His parents agree. This does cause an issue with Rowdy, however.
Rowdy feels betrayed because the person he's supposed to protect is going to basically go away, and Rowdy realizes he can't follow because he's just going to bring Junior down. He's not going to be able to assimilate into the new school.
Yeah, and it's where a lot of stereotypes start to come into play, too, because Rowdy, you know, views white people as the people that destroyed his culture and that have kept Native Americans down for generations. And he sees his friend saying, like, I'm going to go try and benefit from that. And he becomes essentially like almost like the main antagonist of the story whenever they meet up from there. Like, Junior still tries to be his friend, but Rowdy looks for any chance to take him down.
One thing that should be mentioned in this book, there's a lot of pictures in it, because one of the ways Junior deals with his emotions is he draws comics. So we get to see what, you know, Junior is drawing and how he depicts either himself or those around him, or how he's dealing with his feelings and how he's developing emotionally.
Yeah, there's a fun picture with showing like the dichotomy between, you know, white people the way they dress versus Indians on the reservation the way they dress, and it's labeled with things like a bright, like on the white side, a bright future, a Ralph Lauren shirt, positive role models, the latest Air Jordans, and on the Indian side it says things like a vanishing past, a family history of diabetes and cancer, Sears blue jeans, 2 pair for $19.99. So it just shows, you know, that he's what he's up against, that he's going to be with a bunch of rich people, whereas he's forced to, you know, wear hand-me-downs and cheap clothing, and he's got a garbage bag for a book bag instead of a backpack.
And what you'll notice when in his, a lot of his drawings, especially early on, he's drawing himself as this hideous kind of creature and very cartoonish. He'll draw Rowdy usually the same way, but underneath you can kind of see an outline of what Rowdy probably actually looks like, and usually like this very handsome, you know, young boy. But then when he's drawing the white people, they're always these almost angelic kind of people, or they're good looking, you know,
they're all blonde and beautiful.
Exactly. And but by the end of the book, his drawings have changed, where he's now drawing himself, you know, almost, not maybe not, I want to say, you know, equal to the white people, but, you know, the he's drawing himself less cartoonish, less, you know, hideous, more probably accurately, and, you know, kind of is a kind of a growth of his self view and his view of the world. Hey, you know, I may be an Indian, but that's beautiful and strong too.
Yeah, and then he starts at school, and you'd think, oh, it's like, oh, he's going to the all-white school, everything's going to be hunky-dory, but it's far from. There's definitely some culture clash at the very beginning. I did want to read the official and unwritten Spokane Indian rules of fisticuffs, because Junior immediately has to deal with getting called offensive nicknames, such as Chief and Sitting Bull and Tonto.
And at his old school, which he was going from middle school to high school, but, you know, it was the same rules where, you know, fist fights were very common. It was just the way it was. It was, you know, jail style rules for top dog, where he's coming into this lower middle class kind of community. It's you know, as he points out, they're not, you know, middle class or not wealthy by any stretch, but compared to him, they seem very wealthy, but they're all, it's a farm town. It's, you know, a bunch of farmers that, yeah, they'll have a lot of money come fall, but that money's got to ride them for a full year. And when it comes down to it, you know, they're making, say, a lower middle class, you know, working class type income. But with someone who isn't able to have 3 meals a day, let alone 1 meal a day, you know, most days of the week, it still feels like it's, like you said, a cultural shock.
The people start showing him actually a little more respect, though, when he starts getting a little more physical, because the rules of fighting on the reservation are very different from fighting in this school. So I just wanted to say, like, there's 11 rules about fighting on the Indian reservation. If somebody insults you, you have to fight them. If you think somebody is going to insult you, then you have to fight them. If you think somebody is thinking about insulting you, then you have to fight them. If somebody insults any of your family or friends, or if you think they're going to insult any of your family or friends, or if you think they're thinking about insulting your family or friends, then you have to fight them. You should never fight a girl unless she insults you, your family, or your friends. Then you have to fight her. If somebody beats up your father or mother, then you have to fight the son and or daughter of the person who beat up your mother or father. If your mother or father beats up somebody, then that person's son and or daughter will fight you. You must always pick fights with the sons and or daughters of any Indians who work for the Bureau of Indian Affairs. You must always pick fights with the sons and or daughters of any white people who live anywhere on the reservation. If you get in a fight with somebody who is sure to beat you up, then you must throw the first punch, because it's the only punch you'll ever get to throw. In any fight, the loser is the first one who cries. So, Junior is a terrible fighter. He says that after, so rule number 10 is probably the most important. So, he says he's only won, what, 3 fights? But he starts fighting a boy named Roger at this school.
Yeah, who's like the golden boy. He's, I don't know if he's a junior or senior, but he's the most popular kid in school, essentially.
Yeah, he's captain of the football team, captain of the basketball team, you name it. He's, you know, the all-star, all-American athlete. Everyone loves him. And he's, you know,
one of the farm boy, good looks.
Yeah. He's one of the ringleaders who calls Junior all the offensive
the
names you can think of.
Chief and whatnot.
Yeah. And I'm not going to read it, but he says something really racist towards Rowdy. You can find it on page 64.
Towards Rowdy or Junior?
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, towards Junior. You can find it on page 64 if you're following along. And that's sort of like the last straw with Junior.
I felt like that the boy didn't realize what he was saying. Like, he didn't realize how racist it was when he said it until then, when Junior, you know, basically sucker punched him. He's like, oh, I guess there is a line that I can't just let my mouth run and say what my parents would say or what I've seen adults say.
That kind of just nails a lot of sometimes what you might find in a high school, because, you know, brains are still developing, and you think just because you're couching what you're saying in humor, it's not going to offend somebody. But in reality, what he says is incredibly hurtful, and his words have huge weight that he doesn't realize they have, and he winds up getting punched in the face over it.
But at the same time, it also brings street cred and respect for Junior, because now everyone's like, okay, there is a line. You can't just push this scrawny, nerdy kid around. And he's willing to back himself up. And, you know, what we do say can be hurtful to him. And they realize, hey, this scrawny kid, he's stronger than he looks. And I think they realize it before Junior realizes it.
Yeah, and Roger's reaction to getting hit is very different from what Junior's used to. So, like, he punches Roger in the face, and Roger goes like, "You punched me." His voice was thick with blood. "I can't believe you punched me." He sounded insulted. He sounded like this poor little feelings had been hurt. I couldn't believe it. He acted like he was the one who had been wronged. Junior says, like, "Meet me here, you know, after school. We're going to finish this fight." And Roger just gets up and walks away. And that's the end of the altercation.
Yeah, Roger seemed very confused by the whole thing. Like, you know, what just happened? I don't understand. What did I say?
Junior realizes that there's a rule for white people getting into fist fights. They followed a whole other set of mysterious rules where people apparently did not get into fist fights. He calls after Roger and asks him what the rules are. And Roger's like, "What rules?"
But, you know, and then shortly after that, Junior realizes that even though people are treating him nicer, they're still kind of treating him invisibly. And he has a love interest named Penelope, but he also does eventually make a friend, because he's being so gung-ho about, hey, I'm going to make this work. Because he meets Penelope on the first day of class, because he sits next to her and she actually talks to him. And she asks Junior his name, and he says, "Junior." And then the teacher immediately, you know, calls out Junior's name, which is Arnold. And the girl is very confused, like, "How you told me your name is Junior, and you lied to me." And Junior was like, "No, that's what everyone calls me. That's my name. But my birth name is Arnold."
Yeah, and that's like another culture thing. Just everyone calls each other Junior on the reservation.
Yeah, because a lot of juniors out there.
Penelope doesn't really think much about Junior after that, until Junior finds her in the bathroom one day, and he hears someone throwing up, and he finds out it's Penelope throwing up, and he discovers she has bulimia, which is something that he can't even like wrap his head around what not eating or throwing up your food is like.
Especially when he can't get enough food to begin with. But it also gives him the realization that, hey, you know, just because these white people look like they're privileged doesn't mean they don't have their own problems.
Yeah, he's able to make a connection between Penelope and his father, because Penelope has explained the difference between bulimia and anorexia, and she says, "Anorexics are anorexics all the time. I'm only bulimic when I'm throwing up." And it cuts to a comic of his dad saying, "I'm only an alcoholic when I drink." And he's able to, you know, kind of rationalize, like, oh, yes, like, maybe we all do have issues. We all have find different ways to try and make the pain go away. We also meet, his name is Gordy.
Gordy, okay. Yeah, and Gordy is the smartest kid in the school.
He's smart. He's really rough around the edges socially. Makes for good humor.
Yeah, and he'll talk about, like, making love to books and, you know, having orgasms when reading. Which Junior's like, I think you're reading the wrong kind of books for that. But again, he's really smart and they really hit it off. And Junior realizes that it's good to aspire to be more, to be smarter and be a little weird. You don't have to be the Rogers of the world, you know, star athlete, golden boy. I mean, it's not a problem me or Alex ever had. So yeah, I did like it that, you know, at one point, Junior and Gordy are talking, and they're talking about girls getting murdered or going missing, and how it's always the blonde white chick that makes headlines. And Junior's saying how racist that is because Indians are constantly going missing, and they never, you know, have anything said about them. And they're talking a little bit more, and Junior tells Gordy that, hey, I have a crush on Penelope. And Gordy's like, yeah, you're racist against Indians too because you're in love with a white blonde girl.
Yeah, he like quotes like over 200 Mexican girls have disappeared in the last 3 years in the same part of the country. Nobody says much of anything about it. And then he has like, then he just follows up with, I think you're a racist asshole just like everybody else. And kind of just gives Junior another perspective of what his thoughts are and how that his beliefs impact the way he interacts with other people. And then he's surprised in the very next chapter by something that happens, which is he goes to a school dance and he learns a lot about the people he goes to school with there.
Which was?
That they can actually be really nice people.
Yeah.
Because he was worried because he's
dirt poor. Basically, to get to school, he has to be driven by his parents, which means his dad. And so a lot of times he's not picked up and he has to walk home or beg a ride home. A lot of times his parents don't have money for gas to drive a vehicle. A lot of times his dad is too drunk or hungover to drive him.
Yeah, within the first few months of school, he has like over 20 absences just because he doesn't have the ability to make it to school. You know, he lives over 20 miles away from the building, so if he can't get a ride, he has to walk that whole way. Like, there's this whole thing. It's like, I had to walk the whole way twice, and I got blisters on my feet both times.
Yeah, at one point, though, towards right after he got in a fight with Roger, his dad's friend, who kind of guy who looks at it as an uncle, gives him a ride on a motorcycle, and everyone's like, holy shit. You know, he's a guy who looks like a, you know, biker kind of guy with long ponytail and the leathers and everything. Everyone just thinks Junior's this badass motorcycle kid now, and...
Yeah, he starts making friends. He makes friends with Roger, of all people, that he punched in the face. And when they go to this dance, like, Junior has to wear his father's suit, which is from the 1970s. And it's, you know, it's just uncomfortable, tight polyester. But they see him show up in it, and they're like, oh, man, that's so retro. That's so cool. So it's like, even, like, the things he's worried about being embarrassed about wind up working in his favor all of a sudden.
Yeah, like, he didn't have money to get their photo, him and Penelope's photo taken. But they had so much fun dancing, she completely forgot, and he forgot. But then they want to go to Denny's afterwards, and he doesn't have the money, and he's making himself sick. And, you know, Roger basically finds out, and Penelope finds out, and they bail him out.
Yeah.
And they're totally cool about it. And I felt like they were cool about it because he was trying so hard not to have to ask for help.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, he makes up the excuse that he left his wallet at home. And Roger gives him some cash. But after they leave Denny's, like, Penelope asks him, she's just like, she just flat out asks, like, are you poor? And he says, I couldn't lie to her anymore. Yes, I said, I'm poor. And he says, I figured she was going to march out of my life right then, but she didn't. Instead, she kissed me on the cheek. I guess poor guys don't get kissed on the lips. I was going to yell at her for being shallow. But then I realized she was being my friend. Being a really good friend, in fact. She was concerned about me. I had been thinking about her breasts, and she'd been thinking about my whole life. I was the shallow one.
Yeah, and it ends up working out because Roger has a car, and he's, you'll give Junior a ride whenever he needs it. And again, you know, Junior's, you know, prideful enough not to be, you know, bumming rides off them and, you know, asking too much. He's only, you know, last resort kind of thing. And I think that they all give him, you know, props and respect for that, because he's trying to play their game and with his hand, you know, the handicap of poverty. And
yeah, even if they don't know what it's like to be poor, they still like show extreme empathy towards him and do what, you know, friends would do in that situation. So, and he just even ends the chapter just saying, if you let people into your life a little bit, they can be pretty damn amazing.
Shortly after that, the book starts to get darker. The start of every chapter kind of, you know, always starts off happy, and then he'll all of a sudden just hit you with a 2x4 on the side of the head. Like the buddy with the motorcycle gets killed, you know, by a drunk driver. Yeah. His grandmother gets killed by a drunk driver. His sister runs away to get married and then gets killed in a giant...
Yeah, dies in a house fire.
Trailer fire. And it's just like, it's every time it's like all this happy-go-lucky stuff, and then bam, another death.
Yeah, in the meantime, he joins the basketball team.
Yeah, because he just keeps trucking along. He's, you know, what else is he going to do? Like he says, he's been to 40-something funerals, and most of his friends at his new school have been to maybe one or two. So it just death has been part of his life, his whole short life.
So yeah, he has to contend with his grandmother dying. There's a whole funny scene where, you know, the richest guy in town shows up to the funeral.
It wasn't the richest guy in town, richest guy in like the state.
Yeah. This like millionaire guy who like just he's one of those loves Indian culture but does not understand Indian culture. Which is a prominent theme in really all of Sherman Alexie's work, is this that disconnect between, you know, ancient Native American culture and like our understanding of, you know, what it is like to be a Native American. And he has this like quilt that he brings that he wants to return to the Spokane people, and they tell him like, this isn't a Spokane blanket, and then they just all laugh him out of town.
Yeah, the Junior's mother in her grief is able to just totally bitch slap this guy back into his place, and he leaves humiliated. Not that it would probably, he'd actually admit to it and a day later completely write it off as something else, but yeah, it was kind of fun. It was funny to read. And
so yeah, he joins the basketball team. He thinks he's going to be JV, but he winds up making varsity squad.
He doesn't even think he's going to make the team because they don't have a freshman team because they didn't have the budget, and there's going to be, I think, like 7 cuts out of, you know, all the kids that showed up, and 2/3 of the varsity team had already been decided before they even started. And he's like, you know, I'm not going to, you know, make this team. I'll be lucky to make JV, if anything.
Yeah, but he winds up surprising the coach with his ability to hang with the big...
Yeah, he hangs with Roger, of all people. He's willing to take the beating from Roger and stick to him like glue. And
he stands there, he takes hits. Like, I think he ends up losing the one-on-one game, but he still... like they're playing full court one-on-one with full contact, and he hangs it in there the whole time and even makes some really impressive three-point shots, and especially like his three-point accuracy, he makes varsity.
Yeah, the coach basically says, this is the best sharpshooter I've ever seen. We got to have this guy on the varsity team. He's going to be our secret weapon.
Which doesn't work out the first game they play.
Yeah, because they play his old school from the reservation and against Rowdy, of all people. And they're playing at the reservation. And the whole reservation is against him. This is before his grandmother dies, isn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, because after his grandmother dies and his sister dies, the town starts kind of welcoming him back in a little bit.
Yeah, but yeah, he shows up with the team, and the packed gymnasium just boos the shit out of him.
And it ends up being a very short game for him because Rowdy essentially knocks him out, and he has to be taken to the hospital.
Yep, and the team ends up losing.
Their worst loss.
Yeah, it's their worst loss. I think it's their only loss throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, but it's a humiliating loss. They get like a 30-point loss there, so it wasn't even close. But yeah, but it kind of gets Junior kind of woken up, like, hey, you know, Rowdy has got some feelings going on here, and he just doesn't know how to process them. And how can I help Rowdy? Because he realizes that his best friend is just in absolute pain. And I think Junior realizes, hey, I might take some hits from Rowdy, some more hits from Rowdy, to show that hey, we can still be friends.
Yeah, it's definitely like a high school mentality throughout this book where like being able to give and receive hits, it has like almost the opposite effect of what you think it would, and like you earn someone's respect that way. It's kind of funny. They do have a rematch later in the school year, though, and it really turns the tables.
Yeah, they have another game against the reservation, but this time it's in Reardon at the white school. And the coach is worried about putting Junior in because of the first game, but Junior's like, nope, I'm going in. And then the coach does something crazy, which is start Junior, where Junior was usually one of the bench warmers, even though he'd score a ton of points for him later in the games. But this ended up being Junior's lowest scoring game other than that first game where he barely played because he got knocked out. But basically, he gets in a one-on-one with Rowdy, steals the ball, and makes a major shot, and basically knocks all Rowdy's confidence out of him, and knocks the reservation team, the Indian team. They were number one in their division, and from what Junior did to Rowdy, basically took all the wind out of their sails, and Junior had a big kind of awakening moment with that too, where, you know, these kids from the reservation, this was their biggest chance to do anything. And while it was a big deal for Junior and his team, it wasn't the same impact because these kids were going to move on and have bigger and better things later in life.
Yeah, I know I'm reading a lot from the book, but this part.
Yeah, like, you are reading a lot, yeah. Alex. Do we need to set up a quota for you here where you're cut you off?
I'm almost out of dog ears. I got like 40 or 50 more. But yeah, he's, you know, they're cheering because they just blew out the Wahpeton Indians by 40 points. But then he gets hit with this realization. It's like, I realized my team, the Reardon Indians, was Goliath. I mean, geez, all the seniors on our team were going to college. All the guys on our team had their own cars. All the guys on our team had iPods and cell phones and PSPs and 3 pairs of blue jeans and 10 shirts and mothers and fathers who went to church and had good jobs. Okay, so maybe my white teammates had problems, serious problems, but none of their problems was life-threatening. I looked over at the Wahpeton Redskins at Rowdy. I knew that 2 or 3 of those Indians might not have eaten breakfast that morning. No food in the house. I knew that 7 or 8 of those Indians lived with drunken mothers and fathers. I knew that 1 of those Indians had a father who dealt crack and meth. I knew 2 of those Indians had fathers in prison. I knew that none of them was going to college. Not one of them. And I knew that Rowdy's father was probably going to beat the crap out of him for losing this game. I suddenly wanted to apologize to Rowdy, to all the other Spokanes. I was suddenly ashamed that I wanted so badly to take revenge on them. And it's like that quick turnaround, like, he just so direct in that language that he uses, like, every word there is so carefully chosen, like, it hits really hard when he has these realizations.
Another thing with that last game is just before the game, one of the problems Junior has is he throws up before games. He pukes a lot, and his coach finds out and is trying to talk him, you know, down a little bit. And the coach is basically telling him how great of a player he's going to be for the school, saying that, you know, he could go to college and do all that stuff, get scholarships, and talking about a future for Junior. And it's something that Junior never even considered for himself or for any of the Spokane reservation kids, and how big this was coming from his coach, who's a, you know, white man. And I listened to a podcast a while ago about, you know, it was a mathematician who's a black woman, and she's one of the greatest modern mathematicians in the United States right now. And she said what got her to go to college was a white male math teacher at the end of her class, when he's handing back their tests to, you know, say what they got on their finals, said to her, hey, you really got a future in math. You're really smart with math. And later down the road, a few years later, she finds out he said that to every student that took his class that did it even remotely close to well with math. But it was coming, you know, this woman said, it was coming from a old white guy, someone so different from her, you know, it meant so much more. As she said, she went to ended up going to a black college, and she had some really great teachers that were women and black, or, you know, black women that said, yeah, you got, you know, a future in this. And to her, it meant less because, oh, these are just people that look like me. And of course they have to say that. Whereas, so this other guy encouraged her. And that's what this coach in this story is kind of doing. It's like, hey, you can do whatever you want. Doesn't matter. He might be saying it to every kid on his team. But for someone that's their whole life been just beat down and said, you're going to be amount to nothing. Look at all the people around you. You know, it was a, you know, kind of a huge awakening for Junior.
Yeah, and he has to, after, you know, that game in the basketball season, he has to endure the, probably the hardest hit for him, which is the death of his sister. And like every loss he has in this book is due to alcohol in some way, shape, or form. Like, their house burned down because someone was making food in the oven and lit the house on fire.
And they were passed out drunk.
She was drunk in bed and didn't wake up in time.
Yeah, and he kind of blamed himself on that one because he felt that she got the courage to leave the basement and marry this other Native American who was had a gambling problem from another tribe who was, you know, but he felt that because she was looking at him, oh, if Junior can leave, I can leave. And she started writing again and saying, you know, trying to find a job. And she was, all of her letters to Junior were always very positive, even though saying, yeah, I still can't find a job, still can't do anything. We're living in this tiny trailer, but it's the best trailer we've ever, but it was like, you just hear how happy she is to finally get out and get out of her shell, even though she's still living in squalor.
Yeah, you'll hear the letters that kind of intersperse throughout the book. Like, yeah, they are very, like, what she's saying is very concerning, but she words it all so positively. It's very similar to, you know, the way Junior speaks in this book. It's kind of like, they're very cut from the same cloth in that manner.
Yeah, and I think Junior misses a lot of the concerning stuff because he's reading how positive it is and thinking, oh, this is great. She's finally doing great. And I think, you know, as, you know, adult readers, we're like, you know, her just running off with some random guy from a casino is like, you know, major alarm bells. Living in a trailer park, you know, getting, you know, drinking all the time, major alarm bells. You know, all the big parties where she's just, but Junior just looks at it as all positive until it finally does catch up to her.
And it hits in a big way. It almost brings Rowdy and Junior back together, but Junior kind of discovers that Rowdy was secretly in love with his sister.
And he was crying pretty good, and of course Rowdy can't handle someone seeing his feelings like that.
Yeah, so he picks up another fight with Junior and runs off. Junior has to continue on with his life after that, and he gets to the end of his first school year, and he starts realizing things have changed really dramatically in a short amount of time for him. He hasn't left, you know, his culture behind. He hasn't left the reservation. However, he's almost kind of grown beyond that. And, like, he's realized, like, there's more than just being one thing. He's more than a Spokane tribe member. He's part of a lot of tribes. And he, getting towards the end here, he sums it up with, like, I realized, sure, I was Spokane Indian. I belong to that tribe. But I also belong to the tribe of American immigrants, and to the tribe of basketball players, and to the tribe of bookworms, and the tribe of cartoonists, and the tribe of chronic masturbators, and the tribe of teenage boys, and the tribe of small-town kids, and the tribe of Pacific Northwesterners, and the tribe of tortilla, chips, and salsa lovers, and the tribe of poverty, and the tribe of funeral-goers, and the tribe of beloved sons, and the tribe of boys who really miss their best friends. It was a huge realization. From page 1 to page 217, he's completely changed the way he's looks at life and the way he looks at other people. Really, like, broken down a lot of stereotypes, and he's realizing his own true potential in the world. And it's kind of the book just kind of ends with that kind of feeling of, like, hope for him.
And him and Rowdy do kind of make amends and start rebuilding their connection again.
Yeah, and you almost get the feeling like Junior's reached a point where he doesn't need Rowdy in his life anymore because he spends a lot of time trying to get back into Rowdy's good graces, and by the end he's kind of beyond that, and Rowdy comes to him and they're able to kind of get past what has become their differences. And Rowdy acknowledges, like, yeah, you are Junior are destined for greatness, and they are able to just hang out, play a game of basketball, and it just ends with, we didn't keep score.
Kind of a heartwarming kind of feeling to it. So what are your thoughts, Alex?
I think it's a just about as perfectly written as it could be. It's very moving. It's very funny. I think the humor of the story helps ground some of the horrors of what's happening to the poor kid. And I think a lot of people would benefit from reading this. It's quite eye-opening for the messages that it has.
So 3 out of 5 stars?
Yeah, 3 out of 5. Man, 2.5 maybe. I'm feeling generous.
2 3/4.
No, this is a 5 out of 5. Like I said, it's one of my top favorite books, all-timer. It's great.
Yeah, as I said, I had completely forgotten I had ever read this book, but I like it. I mean, it's probably not a top 5 book for me, but definitely a 4 out of 5 stars, 4.5 out of 5 stars for me. It's just a great story. It's very emotional. The author really knows how to jerk you around with your emotions. You know, happy to crying to happy again. It's in, relatively easy read because it's geared towards young high school children that looking to grow and find their way in the world. But it's also very deep and covers a lot of sensitive but important topics that need to be covered. And it does it in a way that I felt was really well done. Or he's never really judging anything or giving out a negative opinion towards it. Like his parents being alcoholics or all the Indians being in his, all the spoken Indians being alcoholics. He never bashes anybody for that problem. It's just, it is what it is. And, he's like, makes a personal decision. I will never drink because grandma told me not to drink. I've seen how it's affected my parents, my sister, my friends, my family, my tribe. And I am going to choose not to follow that path, and taking a very, positive outlook on everything, on the racism. He always Penelope's dad, how racist he is.
Oh, we didn't even get into his, her dad, did we?
Yeah. And he just, you can tell it bothers him, but at the same time, he's like, you know what? He's just a racist white dude, and I'm pissing him off because I'm dating his daughter, and kind of getting that little satisfaction from that. And, even though he realizes that his, Penelope might only be dating him because he's an Indian, it's pissing her father off. He's like, you know what? I'm getting her attention. I want her attention. And Penelope's a decent person who's not a racist, so therefore I'm not going to hold it against her father for having, a bad point of view on me.
Yeah, and I just gotta say, writing a book in this style, 230 pages of generational poverty, racism, stereotypes, and still maintaining a sense of levity and humor is, kudos to Sherman Alexie. This is, writing in this way is downright impossible to do, and he does it so masterfully. He's able to, we barely see Junior's dad, but we know him very completely as, this alcoholic with a heart of gold. It's like the way he, in just a few short interactions, we fully understand a character. It's crazy how he was able to get this out.
So Alex, I'm going to say this right now. Reading this book almost makes up for your January bonus book. You're still a fucking asshole, but you're digging yourself out of the hole a little bit here. You ready for some questions?
Lay them on me.
Question 1. How does Junior's cartoons depict his worldview of racism and the impact of it on his family's lives?
You covered that pretty well in the beginning with a lot of depictions of what he looks like, what natives, the way he draws the natives versus the way he draws the white people. There's clearly a difference. The natives are drawn poor and disheveled and alcoholics and poor health, whereas all the white people, they're blonde, they're beautiful, they're wearing expensive clothes. It also helps break up, solid text, because every now and then you get a quick comic to read, and I think it makes it more readable, and you get a little more imagery than it somehow works better than just, consistent solid text. And I like the way they do that. The illustrations, art by Ellen Forney, are really good add-ons to this book.
Why does Junior lie about his wealth? Is that something that most teens do, you think?
Well, he explains he lies about his being poor because, you know, it's a difficult topic for him. He feels shame and embarrassment over it, especially, you know, being with people. Like, everyone owns their own car and everyone eats every day, and he doesn't get to do that. He's another kid who wants to fit in. And so he tries to fit in by hiding the dire straits that his family is in.
Yeah, I think this is a common thing that you'd find in any school, though, with any group of kids. Everyone's trying to, maybe not consciously, like Junior was, but they're all trying to project something that they're of more than they actually are. You know, wearing designer clothes and specific haircuts and just all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely like, I don't know, it's part of being an adolescent is you're just trying to keep up with the times, and it's not really something you want to talk about when you're just trying to make it through the day every day.
How do Junior's direct language address the stereotypes of being an Indian and living in poverty?
Well, he manages to just sum everything up beautifully. I mean, I read a lot of the parts about that. Just like at the end of the basketball game where he's listing, you know, what all the players on the Spokane team are going to have to deal with when they get home and what they're going to have to deal with for the rest of their lives. You know, it's very blunt. It's very direct. It just came after a big emotional climax in the story. So it's like this huge, you know, blunt language, huge takedown from a moment of what should have been this great exhalation and this great celebration, and realize like, oh shit, there's still, you know, reality to come back to here, and it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah, he's definitely blunt, direct, and keeps it short. And he doesn't really dwell on it, really.
He just makes you cry and moves on.
How does Junior's understanding of addiction transcend ethnicity and class?
It's kind of like when I was pointing out when like Penelope is revealed that she has bulimia, and he compares that to his dad's alcoholism, and he realizes like we're all addicts. We're all trying to find different ways to avoid the pain in our lives. So, you know, like, alcohol is a huge issue on his reservation, whereas everyone else outside the reservation, they're still trying to find ways to cope with what's happening in their lives. Some people are alcoholics, some people are Penelope's a bulimic, you know, some people, you know, we all make bad health decisions in our lives, and sometimes it grows into addictions.
Yeah, he kind of realizes that it doesn't matter how wealthy or the color of your skin, any of your background, everyone can descend into their own personal hell, and it is what it is, and you know, we're all people. There is no one has it necessarily better or worse. It's just, you know, we all have our own problems.
It's kind of like when I stopped drinking and I started just eating candy all the time. It's just like I just trade one bad habit for another, and it's like I don't know, whiskey or Sour Patch Kids. I don't know. It's all.
Yeah, your body's going to hate you no matter what. Either your pancreas or your liver is going to fail on you, Alex. Just pick one.
Yeah, basically. Either way, I'll have diabetes at some point.
How does the story of the funeral reflect a cultural insider's perspective, and how does it disrupt stereotypes about Stoic Indians?
Is that the grandmother's funeral?
Yes.
So that's the one where Rich shows up.
Yeah, and starts telling the Indians how much he loves his, loves their culture and wishes he was one of them, and then kind of gets shamed and laughed out of there. I think, you know, most people would view it as very stoic, very, you know, no emotion at all, other than, you know, probably, you know, they probably picture funeral dances that you've seen on movies and TV, but it would be, you know, it's kind of depicted as just a normal funeral.
Yeah, this is sitting around, you know, remembering someone's life or someone who'd made a huge impact on the people that lived in that community. And just to have someone who thinks they understand show up and just say and do a bunch of really cringy stuff. It's they play it up humorously because, you know, they embarrass him, they laugh him out of town. But they, that's something that Native Americans as a culture have to probably consistently deal with, is people who think they understand what it means to be Native, but they really have no clue.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, what Junior was trying to get across was that they're just people like anyone else. You know, they've dealt with more funerals than probably most people and, you know, outside the reservations would, but that's, you know, they have the same emotions anyone else would. How does Junior view the vast gulf between the two communities that he is a part of economically?
I think he sees it as a vast gulf at first, and he sees it as solely the haves and the have-nots, kind of crosses and blends that as the story goes along. He realizes, you know, like, the white people are always going to have more money and have more opportunities just because of their economic status. However, it's up to him to make the effort to be successful in life, regardless of that.
At the end of the story, how is Junior's and Rowdy's friendship cemented by their knowing of who they are and where they come from?
Yeah, they both took different paths to get there, but they ended up in the same place where they just have that understanding. Like, Rowdy knows and Junior knows that Rowdy is never going to leave the reservation, whereas Rowdy and Junior both know that Junior is going to go on and he's going to do his absolute best and he's going to find success in his life.
Yeah, and they're able to connect over basketball and smack talk, you know, at the end. They can say, hey, you know, this is something that we had before and something we can always have, something that connects, you know, even to other communities, because obviously everyone plays basketball and everyone kind of, all the boys kind of smack talk each other. And it's just, hey, you know, that doesn't change with us. That's something that's going to continue on. Our big final question is the controversy over this book warranted?
You know, as a librarian, I think the controversy over the book's content, I don't think is warranted. It's really hard for me to look at really any book and be like, this is inappropriate for teenagers to read. There's definitely huge tragedies in the book. There's some graphic sexual stuff in the book. However, I don't think it ever crosses any boundaries into anything explicit that should not be seen. He's talking about major issues in the world that I think adolescents have the vast majority of adolescents have the ability to read and understand.
And let's face it, most teenagers know more about a lot of the stuff than we do anyways.
Yeah. I worked in a high school, so I don't know. I heard things I never knew would be a thing before.
Yeah, I think for the controversy that this book in particular created, I can see why people would feel uncomfortable. I think that's kind of the point, is to have that little bit of discomfort to kind of help yourself grow. Because, I mean, how else are you going to grow if you're just living in an echo chamber, you know, and you're hearing everything that, you know, is fine and dandy? How are you going to learn anything?
Yeah, and so, like, you're not going to understand generational poverty by reading this book, but you're going to get a snapshot of what it's like.
And it's going to make you feel uncomfortable because, you know, for like us, we're definitely middle class. And it's like, yeah, there's people out there that don't have it as good as we do. And it is important to be able to acknowledge that and, you know, kind of get that snapshot into their lives. Even if it is, you know, we will hopefully never, you know, lose everything and, but at the same time, we can say, hey, yeah, people don't have a good, and there's ways to help them.
Yeah, it's like with Junior. He was able to find understanding between different cultures and different lifestyles and break down those barriers that we kind of put up with our own, you know, stereotypes and belief structures.
Yeah, and the people in this are never attacked. There's never any shaming or blaming of the Spokane Indians situation or Junior's situation. You know, if anything, you know, just saying how grateful he is, even when there is a lot of douchebaggery or ignorance or assholery, you know, sent his way or towards his tribe's way, you know, he always, you know, he's looking at the positive, saying this is how we overcame in a positive way, you know, where things didn't have to be violent or people didn't have to be put down. And I thought the whole thing was done very tastefully. It was, you know, well written, and so definitely worth a read.
Absolutely. 2.5 stars.
Well, two and three quarters.
My, we are giving today.
So, anything else you want to say, Alex, or have we beat this dead horse?
I think that puts a fork in that one.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie. And now we are moving on to our next story, and which is one of Joe's picks. So what did you choose, Joe?
I don't know. Which one did I choose? Which one's next?
Look through this massive stack of books that you have right next to you.
Yeah, I have a problem. I have too many books, and I keep buying more. And we're in danger in this room of them just collapsing and burying us alive. And, you know, it's kind of like an avalanche of books, and we'll not be found until springtime. So my next pick is The Liar by Stephen Fry. And this is a different book. It is fictional, but it has elements of Stephen's childhood life in it. As if you read his first memoir, he talks about this book, which is why I ended up buying this book. It's hard to describe what genre it falls into. I don't know. Have you read it yet, Alex?
I have not.
But it's kind of a coming-of-age story, spy thriller story, and just kind of a comical book done in a way only Stephen Fry can do. And
Stephen Fry with his renowned dry humor.
And it's just total, complete ability of wit and language that I definitely, Gordy would have said, have orgasms over.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Gordy enough, did we?
Mm-mm. But yeah, and you know, Stephen Fry, you know, whenever you know the topic of top five celebrities you get a buy on, Stephen Fry is always my fifth one. It's four redheads and then Stephen Fry, and it's basically like, I don't care what happens. If he's talking to me, I don't care. Yeah, just let him talk. He's kind of like that Morgan Freeman or James Earl Jones kind of voice for me, where just when he's talking, I'm enraptured.
All right, four redheads and Stephen Fry. I'm going to clip that and just play it over and over again for you.
That could just be a whole episode by itself, Alex.
It's the new name of our podcast, Four Redheads and Stephen Fry.
So yeah, that will be our next book. Keep an eye out for our bonus books that we put out on the 20th of every month. And anything else you have to add, Alex?
Read Stuffed by Sylvia Morrow.
Please don't. Just ignore Alex. He's kind of stupid. We have an Instagram at Kendall Bookworms. We have an email if you want to contact us, kendallbookworms@gmail.com. We have a Facebook profile with Kendall Bookworms. Come check us out. Follow us there. Please write us. Give us comments. We're on all the major podcast apps, so like and subscribe. If you listen on Spotify, I sometimes put up questions and polls, so come check those out. Chat us up. We would love to hear from you guys. We're trying to get a YouTube channel set up. It'll just be the audio, but trying to figure that out. So keep an eye out for that. If we don't have it up yet, we'll hopefully be out shortly. Alex, you missed anything? Ooh, Alex's books. Alex has some books on Amazon you can buy.
Check out Paul Plimpton versus Ragnarok.
Sounds so excited, Alex. That sounds riveting. I mean, tell us more.
Yeah, as of this recording, it's officially a year old.
Ooh.
So that means I'm falling behind. I was trying to do one book a year, and I'm not even close to having another one done.
So after 1 year, you're already lost it?
Yeah, I'm one and done, baby. Now I'm working on some stuff. I think you'll be surprised.
Okay. You haven't said anything towards me to edit lately, so I've been kind of wondering if you just gave up on the whole writing thing altogether, Alex.
Nah, it just takes me a long time to do anything. You know that because you're still waiting for me to return the edits.
Yeah, for three books. Going to be four soon.
Yeah.
Because I can, you know, write up a draft in about 3 months.
Yeah, more like 3 years these days.
So anyways, back to the podcast here. Buy Alex's books. He's got more than just the one book on Amazon, so check them all out.
Yeah. Don't mind the typos. I'm just lazy.
You're really selling it, Alex.
No, they're good. You can highlight them, send them to me. It'll be great. I'll get on those edits right away.
So yeah, this has been Bookworms.
Yep. I'm Alex.
And I'm Joe.
We'll catch you next time.
Out.